This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, everyone.
It's so good to see you all and to be together. For those of you in Zoom land, I want you to know that Jikoji is covered with green and green moss. And I think that pretty soon I'll be covered in moss. I'll be moss too someday soon. And the river is raging. You can hear it everywhere, on anywhere you are on at Jikoji grounds, you hear the river. It's really something. And of course, we're all in that river together. So even though you're there, you're here. And even though we're here, we're with you. Which brings us to right now, right here. And because we're here in this Zendo, I'm filled with gratitude for people who bring us together to support this place right here, and this practice. I want to thank Hogan and Amanda, wherever you are. And the guiding teachers of Jikoji and the board of directors of Jikoji and all of you who keep showing up to take care of this place and this practice and all of us. We can't do this alone. It's not possible. And we all end up being each other's teachers. So I'm thanking you in advance today for being my teacher, all of you. Speaking of teachers, there's an old Zen story that I really like, partly because it's funny and partly because it encapsulates a world of possibilities for me, and you'll probably think of even more. This is from the Blue Cliff Record, case number 11. Some of you may have heard it before. You'll recognize it pretty quickly. This one has the great teacher Wang Po kind of in the teaching position in the story. The background on him, I don't know if it's apocryphal or true, but the background is that he was supposedly 7 foot tall, Wang Po, 7 foot. And if that wasn't impressive enough, he had a protrusion on his forehead, huge protrusion right here in the shape of a pearl. So you know, you can imagine when he was there, it could be kind of intimidating, right? 7 foot tall with a thing. This thing was supposed to indicate a great teacher, a great master. So here's 7 foot tall Wang Po with a huge thing here, striding into the Zendo and saying to the assembled monastics, "You people, you're all dreg slurpers." Dregs, if those of you don't know that word, dregs are the yucky stuff at the bottom of a container, considered worthless. If you drink wine, it's that stuff at the bottom, but it's not pretty, right? "You people, you're all dreg slurpers," he says, this 7 foot monster of a Zen master. And then he says, "If you go on like this, when will you ever see today? Don't you know that in all of China, there are no teachers of Zen?" So one of the monastics comes forward, probably a smarty pants monastic. Maybe you were one of that smarty pants kind of monastics. At least we could say he was a brave one. And he comes forward and he says to Wang Po, "Then what about all those people like you who set up Zen places like this for all of us Zen students to flock to like birds?" And Wang Po says, "I didn't say there was no Zen. I just said there are no teachers of Zen." So I like the possibilities of this story very much. So I'm going to give you a few. The first is that I think he might be telling us the hard truth, that each of us is ultimately unteachable, that we have to be our own teachers. that there's no other way. We must turn the light inwards because no one can teach us anything. The only lessons we learn are those unique to each of us, the lessons that we'll allow in. And since no one can sit down for us and no one can practice for us, maybe the only thing we can really learn is that we're already have whatever it takes to be okay, just like this. And in fact, to take complete, radical responsibility for what this okay looks like, our lives. So that's one possibility. Here's another possibility. He may have been saying, Wang Po may have been saying, that the point of our whole lives is to fully occupy our own lives, just this life, ours, to live our lives with as much dignity, to be as real as we can be, to be as true to ourselves as we can be. If we are real with ourselves and true to ourselves, then good things will naturally follow and our lives will benefit all beings. So a teacher can show you how to stop and how to sit and how to be quiet and how to pay attention. But what arises when you do that is actually up to your practice. And it's unique to you. It's your life. And no teacher can show you how to be fully you. It's up to you. Sorry, it is. You cannot slurp up someone else's life, okay? You drag slurpers. You can't slurp up somebody else's life or mimic anybody else and call it yours. You have to do you. You have to have your own life. In other words, every one of your thoughts about who you are and what this is right now is your teacher. So I think Wang Po is telling us to learn our unique lessons, the Dharma of this one. And in doing that, perhaps he's suggesting that we can release or loosen our grip and all the things we think is happening to us, all of our projections, the things we think about what's going on, about who we are and who someone else is. When you start to notice what's happening right here and now, you start realizing it's the truth of your experience, not somebody else's experience. It's yours. There's no difference between your experience and this. In other words, every one of your thoughts, every one of your feelings is your teacher. Okay, so maybe Wang Po is also looking at this very central gift of our practice, which is interdependence. Maybe there really are no teachers, but of course there are teachers. Maybe there are no students of Zen, but of course there are students of Zen. And also, because we all exist together, all those students, all those teachers, there's this individual and collective reality, this mutuality that we're experiencing all the time and right now. Kaizen Doug was here earlier. One time I heard him in this seat give a talk, and he said this mutuality almost with a shaking voice. He talked about the trees, the mutuality of us and the trees, these trees that are moving around in the wind right now, how they take our breath. And they give back our breath. They take our carbon dioxide and magically transform it into oxygen for us in this invisible process of mutuality and coexistence. So every thought, every feeling, every experience that you have, including breathing, is your teacher. So I think it's a big gift that's happening all the time. Everything we depend upon all the time, everywhere, all at once, is your teacher. This mutuality seems like it's invisible most of the time, but it's actually kind of hard to ignore. You wouldn't be here but for all of that invisible processing going on. With all the ways we have to receive, experience, interpret, and then make decisions about the information we get in this body. And even though we think we see with our eyes and smell with our nose and hear with our ears and taste with our mouths and touch with our hands, the whole system is working together all the time. For those of you who like to cook or eat, which is probably all of us, I always like to think of the phrase, you eat with your eyes first, right? When you make something pretty and you put it on the plate in front of somebody, your eyes start eating. You know, you appreciate it. So maybe your ears start tasting and your mouth starts feeling, or your mouth does feel. But all of these things, the point is they're all working together all the time. In Buddhist terms, we sometimes refer to this process of receiving information and interpreting it and sensing it and tasting it and making an opinion about it and then acting on it through the five skandhas. So form and sensation and perception and formations and consciousness. But they're all engaged together all the time. Just on the way up here, to drive up here, I thought, oh, really, they should have equal signs between them all. They should have equal signs between them all because they're all, the system is all working together all the time. Talking and listening, giving and receiving, like the trees and us, like a teacher and a student. So every feeling, thought, sensation, idea, opinion is your teacher. So it's best to be pretty aware as to what you're thinking and feeling and sensing, and deciding what to do with those opinions and thoughts and feelings and sensations. It's best to be attentive so that you do no harm, or the least amount of harm you can do, that you hold tenderly everybody else who's going to be at the receiving end of how you just interpreted this, including you. Responsibility for that is kind of a big deal. Not to harm each other, because we're not really accepting and understanding and integrating our own baggage, what we bring to the situation and what we project. It almost makes you want to stop talking, but that's not going to happen. So another possibility of Huang Po is, he says this part of the story, if you all go on like this, when will you ever see today? I read one version of this story that said that all the assembled monastics were kind of traveling monastics. They go from temple to temple, they listen to the teachings, and they move on. And maybe that's a literal response to that. Maybe he's saying, if you keep searching around, going to teacher to teacher and teacher, how are you ever going to be present for what's happening right here? Another way of looking at it is, if you keep searching outside of yourself, how can you ever be here in your whole life, fully, truly alive? So I'm speaking of teachers, because I remember being here in this Zendo when one of our now guiding teachers, Dan Zigman, first sat here for the first time in a brown robe. And I remember his voice trembling a little as he spoke about having become a transmitted priest. And I remember feeling really grateful to him. And I hope I said, thank you, Dan, wherever you are, thank you, Dan. Because I remember feeling, wow, someone felt really willing to be responsible, to step up. And I remember when my friend Ocean sat in the seat in his brown robe for the first time in the sendo. And again, this deep gratitude to these people who are willing to take responsibility for carrying this lineage of Kobun forward. And now here I am, for the first time, in a brown robe, in this seat, in this sendo. And I don't know how I got here. I don't know how any of you got here either. So I'm not taking it too personally. But it's kind of a miracle that we're together. Like, every day is a miracle. Sometimes someone will look at you and see you very deeply. And you see back. And then there's a smile and a smile back. And in that smile is a breath that's both giving and receiving, like the trees and us. So that's how I got here. I think, maybe. The fact is, I feel like I'm just practicing with you, like we've always done. I just have a different outfit on, but I'm still just practicing with you. This is how it's always been together. I know it looks like I'm teaching. Maybe I'm teaching, but inside it feels like we're still just practicing together. And I think I'm going to keep it that way. So please don't put me on a pedestal, because there's only one way down and it hurts. So can we just keep practicing together? The fact is, today it looks like I'm teaching, but you really taught me to be in this seat today. If I hadn't had to give the talk, I wouldn't have done all this thinking about Wang Po and trying to stand in his shoes and see what it would like to be 7 foot tall with a huge protrusion on my forehead and call you dreg slurpers. So this robe represents also a lineage, and I am respectful and sincerely devoted to this lineage. It's like being given a family jewel, passed down for nearly 25 centuries and expressed through Kobun. And now it's in my care. It's up to me to keep it well. I'm not alone. I have you and everybody else, but it's a serious responsibility. And I carry it with sincere devotion, because Kobun is right here, as is Vanya and Shoho and all of you. And when I take myself really too seriously, I actually say to myself out loud, everything depends upon me in this moment. And of course, that usually makes me laugh, because on the one hand, it's not true. And on the other hand, everything does depend on just this moment, on my intention and yours toward this moment. So there's a teaching that this robe has already given me. On YouTube, I found a piano piece called Sotaku Doji. The composer attributes that title, Sotaku Doji, to a Japanese phrase from a Zen teaching. I could not find the source of this saying that this is Zen teaching, but I will eventually. I looked up the characters for Sotaku Doji and asked Google to translate them for me. And they mean, Sotaku Doji means literally spit and peck at the same time. And apparently the Zen teaching, by which I can find no attribution, is this. Imagine a chicken, a hen, and an egg in a nest. I don't know if any of you have kept chickens. I've had chickens for a long time. And when an egg is about to be born, there's this little tapping that goes on from the inside. The chick is tapping. Tap, 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 tap. And guess what? The mommy taps back on the outside. Tap, 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 tap. And that's how a chick is born. They have to be mutually present for each other at the same time, at the same place, just like us, in order for there to be the possibilities of now, of birth, right now. Of course, I always worry what happens if the chick is there tap, tap, tapping, and the mommy hen is out, you know, catching the first worm or distracted by that rooster or whatever is going on in her world. But suffice it to say, for that chick to be born at the moment at which it needs to be born, there has to be this mutuality. Like us right now, we have to be conjoined kind of in this space to help each other practice to be here and waking up. We have to show up for each other for this new life right now and right now and again and again and again. And in doing that, we have to be responsible for our own thoughts and feelings and sensations and recognize that they are our teachers. And we have to take that responsibility before we act on them, before we say anything with our body, speech, or mind. Some of you know I'm really, really fond of Dogen's fascicle, Uebutsu, Yobutsu. Some of you were in winter practice period. And that fascicle says, only a Buddha together with another Buddha can fully understand the true character of all things. Only together can we experience and appreciate and actually live what this is right now, this reality which is beyond thinking and beyond language, this kind of fresh reality that's only happening right now, just this, without our ideas and our opinions, and maybe even without our baggage. So if you fast forward from 13th century Dogen to 21st century, you can appreciate the songwriter David Byrne, who says, every hand goes looking for its partner, searching for its partner. That would be you and I, right? Right now, all of us together. That would be the trees and us. That would be the teacher and the student. The chick and the hen, birth and death, loss and love, etc. ad infinitum. We don't have to search for the other hand. It's right here. We're all already in partnership. So when you hear the tap, tap, tapping, when you feel the call, please respond. As you, as no one else can do, you, please respond as you. And when you're being you, which is the only thing you have to offer, you can watch life spring up with all the possibilities, like all that green outside. You know, it does occur to me that many of us consider ourselves the chick and the egg, right? We like the idea of being that cozy egg. And truth be told, maybe a lot of us want to stay in that egg and not ever have to come out. Feels pretty safe in that egg. There's a New Yorker cartoon that I'm going to share with you. I'm a big fan. Sorry, you're going to have to put up with this. I'm going to share it on the screen if I can. See if this works. Can you see it? Can you read it? Okay, I'm going to read it to you because I don't know if you can. Maybe I can make it a little bigger. There's, I would say an elderly couple, but they're probably my age and I don't like to think of myself that way. But there's an elderly couple at the table with a grown man in a little, everybody's pretty dressed for dinner. And he's looking at his parents and says to his dad, "Can't I just stay here with you and mom? I don't like what I've seen in the real world." So I kind of think that's us a lot of the time in the egg. Couldn't we just stay in the egg? Couldn't we just not have to come out? Well, another way of looking at this teaching is that you're not the chick, sorry, and you're not the hen. You're the shell. You're the actual shell. The you that you think you are that shell, that thin, thin, thin membrane that separates you, or so you think, from everything else, from this right here. Everything you can experience is it pecking at you right now. Tap, 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 tap. Come on, come out. Be with us. It's all waiting for you. You can emerge out of that shell, free of these divisions about hen and chick and teacher and student and me and you and us and them and life. And death. So are we willing to be the chick or the hen or the shell? Are we willing to break through beyond those ideas to complete interdependence and also a particular self and have those both things happen at the same time in this kind of dynamic tension? In other words, are we really fully willing to live our own lives? Like the way it is right now, not waiting for a particular set of stuff to emerge or line up just so it meets our needs and we feel safe again. Can we just be willing to be ourselves and for everyone? Are we willing to be the teacher and the student and the teaching? Thank you for your practice. Thank you for your teachings. And this is the time when all the drag slurpers get to chat. So anybody here or there or anywhere has something to say, I'm listening. We're all listening. So I made you really self-conscious, didn't I? By saying you're responsible for everything you say, think, and feel. So watch what you're going to say. Todd.
Somebody brought up something a few weeks ago, how some of the Dharma talks, somehow they seem like it's exactly what I was thinking or something like that. It's such a strange mystery. But in a nutshell, I was just thinking about bike riding. I didn't know how to bike ride. There was a time I didn't know how to bike ride. Like my daughter, she didn't know how to bike ride. And as a father, I was sort of like a teacher in a way, I suppose, reluctantly many times, didn't want to be in that position. But I didn't know gravity was a huge thing with raising little tiny human beings. So I didn't want her to fall. So we had these training wheels and I had these axle extensions where I could stand on the back, and we went down this steep road and she just could not figure out how to brake because I was on the back and I could brake for her. Right. Want to protect this innocent, fresh, beautiful human being from hurting themselves. But that's actually what you really needed to do. And so, anyway, the point is, I couldn't ride the bike for her. She's really good at riding the bike now. That's all I need to say.
Thank you for your teaching. her and us and you. And I like how you said she really needed to do that. And you really needed to do that. Yeah, it's a really big deal, kids. My dad used to say, I can't stop you from making your mistakes. You have to make them. They're yours. I think it's a beautiful gift to let people make mistakes, because they're not mistakes. They're teaching, right? That when she falls and when you feel that learning curve happening, what a gift. She knows how to please the brakes for the rest of her life. Thank you, Todd. Karen.
What a very beautiful talk today. I'm a crier. And how grateful I am that you're wearing your brown robe and being there in that position. And I have two things that are jumping. I guess I'm just going to follow the emotion here. Well, first of all, I think it's so sweet that you talked about, is it Quanpo?
Wangpo or Wangbo.
Like Huan?
Well, H-U-A-N-G-P-O. H-U-A-N-G, not Juan.
But I knew it wasn't J-U-A. Anyway. This symbol of wisdom. I just wondered, you know, why is that a symbol of wisdom? And then I realized, oh, you know, our lineage makes you do extra bowing now. So maybe we'll start to see one form on your forehead.
You first, Karen.
Oh, okay.
Maybe we already have them just inside.
But the other thing, and I just because it's just really right here, is that I just made me wonder if we could dedicate our practice today to our to the community outside of LA who were celebrating Lunar New Year, and you know we're brutalized in that, and I just want to really just like, it's so much a part of our lineage to to celebrate the moon cycles and all of the influence from multiple Asian countries. And I just wanted to say something together with us about that today, because it's just really so I'm crying, both sad and happy today. It's definitely a celebration, but it also is a heavy mourning. So thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Beverly has her hand raised.
Yes.
From Beverly. Go ahead, Beverly. Hi. Yes.
On your story on the chicken and the egg, in your cartoon, far from wanting to stay in the egg, some of us never got to be in the egg at all. Then you spend your life looking for the missing egg in the hen, right? And in doing so, all kinds of wonderful adventures happen, despite the inherent misery of it. But you never stop. You keep looking, and I'm wondering if that can be a spiritual journey or search.
Mm. Sounds like it has been. Right?
I believe it is. You know, some people think it's just a life misery, and it can be. But I've found that in my life, sometimes if that went away, that search, that there'd be something missing and a kind of a emptiness. It's a motivator.
Mm. Thank you, Beverly. The thing that comes up for me is in response is that we've always been supported. We're still being supported. Sorry, are you still there, everyone?
Yeah, you cut out. I got to, we're all being still supported.
Okay, hang on. We lost the connection for a sec. One sec. What a minute. Yeah, I am. Well, what I wanted to say is that we talked earlier about these invisible mechanisms of mutuality. And I'm not going to deny for a second that some of us did not have the support that we needed in that egg, or even maybe before the egg or after the egg. And yet, here we are. And I'm with you, you know, I experienced what you're talking about, Beverly, and I have experienced, I think, maybe everybody who comes to practice has this deep, deep awareness of suffering, beginning here and going all the way to the streets of LA today. And the bottom line is, we're in this together. There's no way to do this alone, any of it. My friend, my little sister in the Dharma, gave me a stamp with the Japanese characters for love on it. And if I can find a stamp pad, I'll stamp you all with it today. And I've been thinking a lot about, this is my first chop, I don't have my names carved yet or any of that. I will, but this is my first chop. And the fact that it's love, I don't mean love in the sentimental, mushy-gushy Hallmark card. Of course, I do mean that too. But what I really mean about love is the possibilities, because love makes you feel so deeply connected so that when you're looking through the eyes of love, you see love. And here's the stamp that was given to me as a gift. And it feels like that's probably the teaching of everything for the rest of my life, and maybe yours too. Stamp love, which is the possibilities of right now in this moment. Yeah, maybe the egg was not a great place. Maybe we didn't ever feel the security of the egg. But right now we have the opportunity. Right now, there's the world of possibilities. And by the way, it only exists right now. Can't go back to the egg. You can't go forward to some other thing else. It's just this. I mean, I know we say this a lot and I feel like it gets to sound like almost hackneyed, but the truth is, that's the truth. The possibilities for everything are here, just this, right now. And to me, that's love. Those possibilities encapsulated in this reality that we're making together.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.